Hi, team. Welcome to the Escape Podcast for Star Wars The Old Republic. This episode, you'll hear news that was previously classified as super secret, get a tour of a quaint little place we call the Dread Fortress, and maybe you'll learn about where in the game you can find firsthand evidence on why you really should let the Wookiee win. As usual, we have an astromech standing by to record this and brave the chill of deep space to broadcast this to you. You all set, EPC-8? No. It's not too cold out there. Here's some mittens. They'll keep your hands. Oh. Hi, Seema. How's it going?
Going pretty well. I guess I could use those mittens since I actually have hands, but it's not that cold here yet.
There you go. I'm so thoughtful that way with our droids.
Let's see. This week, we had a lot going on. I spent a lot of time in Oricon doing dailies and getting the weeklies done. I just really love that place. I love those kind of environments where the mobs are really dense and you have to be very crafty if you're trying to skip them, or you have to be very thuggish if you're just going to run through and kill them all, or you have to be very fast if you're going to run through and, you know, escape them at the far end. I don't know why. I just kind of like that. So I did that. And I'm also kind of happy about the change to elite comms. I think it's fine. I don't think it's really hurting the fact that ops gear should drop in ops, because the gear that you can buy with elite comms or ultimate comms always has been the gear that has the stats that are just not perfect. And if you want the better, slightly better stat arrangement, those do come from the drops and the tokens that you have to do ops to get. So I'm okay with that. And I'm happy to be able to gear up my an alt or two with elite comms. So I'm having some fun with that. Also, I always try to listen to Utini Cast, because those guys always cover all the news in a very good level of detail. They come out on a Friday, so it's a good way to start off your weekend and be informed on every little aspect of SWTOR. So I enjoy that.
Yeah, those guys are great. They're one of my favorite also.
And it's just fun to listen to another bunch of people who enjoy playing the game, because I enjoy it and I enjoy the game, and I like listening to other people who enjoy the game.
Exactly.
And on the operations front, on Wednesday, which is normally our 16-man group, we actually had to pare it down to 8-man because of some key members that couldn't make it, and we just couldn't pug it all the way back up to 16. So, but that still worked out. We are able to take some guildies with us that don't normally get to do operations or are just starting, which is kind of the goal of that group. So I'm happy about that. And then on Thursday, in our Taco Harder group, which is the group that we try to do slightly harder content with, we started out the evening doing the first two bosses in hard mode, Terra from Beyond. And then we went over to hard mode, Dread Fortress. And I think the reasoning behind that, well, who knows what the reasoning is behind that, but our Ray leader always has a reason. He tells me every time I say that. I think because we have only 2 hours on a Thursday night, I think he was like, wanted to get started with something that he knew we would get some comms from and then go try the new content. And on Taco Harder,
sure,
we did get
the warm up.
Yeah. We did get the first boss down, and we got some attempts in on the second boss before our time was up, which was highly entertaining. But we have some more to say about Dread Fortress later.
Absolutely.
And then with our regular raid team that you and I are on, Lords of Light, or as, you know, LOL, we did go into story mode, Dread Fortress, and we actually did fairly well. We cleared it. We ended up two-shotting the second boss, which was really a stopping point for us last week. We tried him several times and didn't get him down, but I guess all that practice led us, you know, meant something. And then the other bosses in there were, they had their little foibles, but, you know, they didn't cause us as much trouble as that second boss. How about you, Max? How did your week go?
So as you said, the operations stuff did go pretty well. We did Dread Fortress. We'll talk about that in detail. That was pretty cool, getting all the way through that in story mode. We probably should go into hard mode relatively soon, but it was good to clear it on story mode. We've got a couple people who still have 162 gear in a couple slots. myself included. I think I now am down to a couple armor rings and maybe one mod and one enhancement that are 162s. The armor rings I still have because I'm retaining some set bonuses.
Right.
So we'll get everybody to fill in those extra slots and then we'll be in hard mode and cranking through some of that. We'll be swapping back and forth between Dread Palace and Dread Fortress though too. We haven't done Dread Palace yet, so that'll be cool. I did some rep grinding, which I don't normally do. I'm behind on all my reps, but I was one of the people who sat out on Wednesday because we had like 12 people, but it was just, since we have a short amount of time, it would have taken too long to find four people to fill in to make 16. And a couple people were going to go grind rep or something anyway. So I went with someone. We went and did all of CZ198 and we did all of the Oricon rep. And I maxed out my Oricon rep. I broke out my spreadsheet for Oricon the last couple weeks.
Wait a minute. You mean you max it out for the week?
Yeah, sorry. No, just for the week. Not
I'm keeping you
honest. I don't
think
anybody's maxed it out yet. Because it hasn't been 5 weeks, so nobody's maxed it out yet.
No, but you could have enough tokens to do it by now.
Which Arvachette does. Arvachette, who is drives trucks for a living. And who we now are convinced is an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. based on last week's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode.
Right.
So yeah, Arvachette, I think, has enough tokens. I just had enough tokens. I'm making sure I'm capping out the week. But I also updated my spreadsheet to take into account the guild bonus that you can get. There's a difference between what subscribers get and what non-subscribers get in terms of turning in each token. And there's the trick where you can't use a token after you reach 12,000 rep for the week or higher. However, if you're at 11,999 or less, you can use one more token. So if you get as close as you possibly can mathematically and then use a purple token, you can exceed that limit and it allows you to get a little bit further each week.
Right.
So I have my spreadsheet updated and people can find it on newoverlords.com. I posted it under the calculation, the tools subheading.
Different levels of guild rep?
I have 8%. I have a field in there. You just type in your guild rep multiplier percentage, whatever it says on your guild tab, between 0 and 10%. Plug that in, and then I've got two columns on how many tokens you still need to get legendary for either subbed or non-subbed, and it shows you what you need.
Why did I even ask that question?
what I don't have, and I'll probably add, but Delphi's got a nice one, is the chart that shows for your either sub or non-sub, what is the maximum you can get off of tokens and not surpass 12,000?
Right.
And how does that break down in terms of what the total permutation of greens versus blues versus purples is that you could turn in to reach that number and then turn in one more purple?
Right.
Because if you could think about it, you could turn in like 35 green ones or 25 green ones and 5 blue ones and 1 purple one. There's about 30 permutations of what you could do. You'll want to look that up if you're really trying to min-max. But, you know, as long as you're close, it's good enough too. It actually doesn't save you any time getting to legendary. It does save you time. It saves you 1 week in getting to champion. You can get to champion 1 week earlier.
Oh, well, that's good to know. I wasn't sure if it saved you any time in the long run anyway, but at least it does to champion. Good.
Yeah, not to legendary, which it does to champion, which mattered for the Gree, which is why I started doing it in the first place, because the Gree armor required champion.
Right.
So you got to start wearing the armor 1 week earlier if you did this, but not if you didn't min-max that way. It was right on the border.
I loved that armor too when it first came out.
Yeah, I still do. Let's see what else. I continue leveling my Marauder, doing PvP pretty much every day, space mission here and there, all my class quests, planet quests, plowing through Hoth right now. PvP's been going fine. I keep getting new abilities. I got to remember to use them. I got the AoE stun one that I haven't been using very much. My son was chiding me over it as he was looking over my shoulder. Dad, why aren't you pressing that? Quick, press F9. Okay. But that's going pretty well. Did both arena and regular 8v8 PvP by queuing on my Marauder. And he's pretty good. He's pretty good in PvP. It'll be even better at max level. The Marauder comes late to some abilities that are really useful. And then what else did I do? You know what? Last night I did Ilum for an hour on my mercenary, It's because the quest log. You know, if you keep the story quests in your quest log, it sits there. So I've had this one in there really for what, like 9 months now.
Easily.
You know, go talk to, you know, Jack Johnson on Ilum, and you can't abandon it. You can't delete it. So I had to go. So last night I'm like, fine. I'm going to at least clear one out. I've got Macu Binocular ones. I've got Nightscythe ones. I got
Vehicle.
So I'm fine. I'll clear this Ilum one out. It took me an hour. I had to do the whole planet. You can't stop until you're done.
Right.
Malgus is yap. I'm like one shot and everything. So it was fine. But yeah, so took me like an hour.
You can't just talk to Jack Johnson and then it's over. He wants you to go talk to someone else.
Yeah, Jack Bauer or whoever's down there in the bunker.
Yeah.
So yeah. So Ilum is done. That's one out of my log that I don't need to worry about anymore. And to round it out, I have been keeping track of the community. Also, we got a nice shout out on the Corellia Run Radio show notes this week. They mentioned our podcast and linked back. Those guys do a fun podcast too. We've listened to their podcast plenty of times. I appreciate what they do. They're fun. They seem to be about in the same place in content as we are. They're not super elite like some teams are. We're obviously not. So that's fun to listen to. And then I was following Gaddock Teague again this week. He went to the New York Cantina event. There's some good things that came out of that Cantina event from BioWare. I went to the Chicago one. He did a good thing. He went on Twitter throughout the week and had people submit questions, and he tried to get as many answered as he could when he went out there to New York. He talked about them in his podcast this week. So that was pretty cool.
That's really a great thing to do for the community. It's well appreciated.
And we saw some fun things, which we'll talk about next in the news that came out of that Cantina event as well. So next in the news, top news items that might sound a little something like this.
That is, of course, the introductory music for the trailer for Galactic Starfighter. We no longer have to call it Super Secret Space Project. It has its own very own name, Galactic Starfighter. They're calling it a digital expansion. In any event, it is the next digital extension, we could say, because they're not raising the level for characters or anything like that. But they've done a really, I think, interesting and creative thing, which is they are staging how soon you get access to it. So for subs, you will get access to it. If you're a sub, if you have a subscription already or you get one in time, you'll have access to it on December 3rd. You have to be actually a sub by November 1st to get the extra bonuses. But if you're a sub, you can get access on December 3rd. If you're preferred, you get access on January 15th. And then if you're free to play, you get access on February 4th. But everyone get access and it's free to everyone. So that's cool. So eventually, it's like a little perk to the subs, but it's free to everyone, which I think is really smart.
Yeah, that's very cool.
There are bonuses you get for subscribing so that you can have the early access, like you can unlock the gunship role, which we'll talk a little bit about roles, very little bit. There's paint jobs that you can get for doing the early sub. Yeah, you need to sub by December 3rd to get December 3rd access, but you need to sub by November 1st to get the extra bonuses.
Yeah, those couple to get the roll and the paint job, I think.
Right.
And then I think it says access. I don't know if you get it for free or if it's probably rep based, but there's access also for everybody eventually to two new suits of adaptive armor, it sounds like.
Well, yeah, I think access will be free, but that does not mean maybe you have to buy your ship or something. I don't know. So you might have to pay for something. This is strictly PvP. It's has something they call different game modes. They don't really elaborate on that, but one of them for sure is going to be 12v12 combat. So that's going to be free flight, not on rails, a team of 12 against a team of 12. fighting in space, you know, with pew pew and all that.
So in that video, the video that we just played the trailer of, they showed some of the gameplay. And in the content that was leaked from the New York Cantina event, they showed some screenshots. And there's some pretty nice looking stuff out there in space.
Yeah, definitely. And they're going to have different multiple battle zones, which I kind of envision that's like different maps. Like, you know, one looks like it's in an asteroid field. And, you know, I imagine one will be in a more open space and different things like that. You're also going to have access, or there's going to be a variety of ship roles. So they said, for instance, a scout, you may be a scout, or you may be playing a gunship. So like one of the perks you can get, remember, for the if you're sub by November 1st, is you get to unlock the gunship role. So I'm thinking there might be some role that is the basic role and you can unlock the gunship role. There's also, I'm thinking, going to be a scout role, which I can kind of see being possibly, maybe it's a fast ship that doesn't have as many guns or doesn't hit as hard, but it can get in and out and you can, you know, gather recon for the rest of your team. Or in my mind, I'm even imagining some little, maybe it has like a stealth ability. Okay. I don't want to go overboard here. I was going to call it a cloaking ability, but you know, I don't want to go all Star
Romulan
Trek either.
My Romulan bird of prey.
What's that?
Yes. My Romulan bird of prey. Yeah, when can I unlock that?
Exactly.
Gaddock, ask BioWare when I get a Romulan bird of prey.
Dear BioWare, I do not have a Romulan bird of prey. Please fix.
That's like going to McDonald's and trying to order a Whopper. That's just not going to work out well.
Yeah, yeah. Who hasn't done that, though?
Yeah, they named three ship types, three roles so far. And maybe there's only three for now. They didn't explain what the difference is in the roles yet, though. They keep calling it roles. So it will be interesting to see.
From scout to gunship. So I think it's like different, mm-hmm. you know, based on your ship.
Yeah, if it says role, then I'm expecting they do different things. And maybe not as simple as healer, tank, DPS. But you could imagine those kinds of roles. Some sort of remote repair type ship. Some sort of more heavy ship that, you know, sort of heavy tanking ship that goes in.
Yes, like I fire some droids through space that come and repair your ship.
Yeah. You talked at some point, once we get more details, we'll talk about it more and what we know and what the roles are and that kind of thing. It'll be exciting as it comes up. I thought it was interesting. They announced customization of your starfighter. They announced the early rewards for people who subscribe by November 1st is custom paint job. They showed off some of the paint jobs in the early released art from the New York event. The paint jobs sound to me very well suited to cartel pack and cartel coin updates in the future. Now, since they're giving this away, I would expect them to need to build in some sort of monetization model. That kind of cosmetic customization, get new ship models, get new ship skins. That sounds like a great option there for me,
right,
from my perspective.
I think it's another way that shows that BioWare is, you know, learning from past experience, because one of the things people wanted from the beginning was to be able to customize their ships. And they finally just said, you know what, that's not going to happen because those ships are really hard for us to change because of all the quest hooks that are in there and everything. So that's not going to happen, but they come out of the gate making these ships customizable.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think a cool thing too. I would like to customize my ship that's the home for my characters, but customizing these ships is going to be a lot of fun. They also talk about progression. And what it sounds like is a separate sort of leveling or progression system for space combat itself. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves. They did, though, say that it's tied to character perks for your characters, that you can get rewards for your characters. And in particular, they just mentioned XP. I don't know if there'll be anything else. Probably things like armor, you know, armor you can unlock. But you definitely can get XP for your characters by doing PvP space combat.
Yeah, what we don't know is, you know, if it's tied to your land character's progression at all in terms of, do you have to be a certain level to be able to play? Does your character have to be a certain level to be able to do this? Or if it's completely divorced and you can start playing it the day, you know, the day you start the game?
Yeah, good question. And then we also heard that, and this is not from BioWare, this is from other people, that there are, so the public part of this space expansion has been announced, but there's now, it seems to be still another super secret part of it, which is early beta. That I think it sounds like some people are getting individual invites into some early beta testing. If they're talking about December 1st for December 3rd or so for access, they do need to be getting into testing already on this. To only have 6 weeks left for testing isn't all that long amount of time. So I would expect testing to be going on. I wonder if it'll hit the PTS though for open testing relatively soon as well.
I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't hit the PTS for open testing. I wouldn't be surprised if they just open it.
Yeah, they could. And then finally on that, we just wanted to give a shout out to one of our guildies, Cosmic Debris or Zethrin, who does an awesome job on our forums of keeping us apprised of all of this type of news and information. She breaks pretty much every news story faster than I ever see it on Twitter. So
yeah,
that's where we're getting most of this news that we come up with. We just read what Zethrin posts in our news thread.
Pretty much.
So thank you.
If you read through that thread on our forums where she posts the news, there'll be like, after she posts it, there'll always be someone saying, "Damn it, I came here to post this and you beat me again."
Yep, she's awesome. So what else we got for news?
Well, we also have a patch coming up, patch 2.4.1. It has the bounty contract week is going to start tomorrow, actually. Well, tomorrow as we're sitting here recording this, but it will have started by the time you hear this. With the bounty contract week, there's going to be a new vehicle, the Praxon Arrow, I believe it's called. There's going to be a new pet, and these are available for purchase, I believe, with bounty contracts, although I'm not sure how you get the pet. And some minor fixes like... I think there was a problem where if you had already unlocked a particular kingpin, you could still get the quest for it, but then you couldn't do it because you had already done it, that kind of a thing. So now you can't get it in error.
Yeah.
They fixed a few there's a bunch of like minor fixes in it too, and they fixed a few cartel items. There's also going to be a new pack coming next week. They say they have fixed the problem with companions dying when you quick travel in the CZ-198 area. But to me, I'm just thinking it will mean they'll die when you quick travel in some other area. Because it seems to like be one of those whack-a-mole problems where they fix it in one place and it kind of starts happening in another place. I do have to say I find it
dead companions
very
laying around
upsetting
there.
To go to CZ-198 and see all these dead companions on the floor. I try to make sure and res mine right away whenever it happens. Or, dismiss it and call it back. Some minor fixes to the group finder. A couple of minor fixes in flashpoints. There are some tweaks to the two ops that are in Oricon. There was a lot of noise last week about problems, especially with the second boss in Dread Fortress, Draxus, which we ran into. We'll talk about a little bit, but those are at least the one that we saw the most of has been fixed according to the notes. And then there's some little stuff with the missions with some legacy and achievement fixes. And that's it for the patch pretty much.
Yeah. So not too big, but plenty of fixes in there, which I appreciated seeing. And then to round out the news, I wanted to throw out there, I've actually done a couple announcements on the fleet. We haven't done that very much, but one of our operations team, the SUP team, due to some shuffling of members and people moving around and work schedules, has two openings still, I believe, one for a DPS and one for a healer. Those guys run Monday night from 8 to 11 Eastern for their 8-man night, and then they're part of our 16-man night from 9 to 11 Eastern on Wednesdays. I think it's a healer and a DPS that they could still use. They're going to pug them for the next couple of weeks. Anyone who's 55, interested in finding an ops team, feel free to check in with me or Arvachet, who's the ops lead that we talked about, who's also an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And, yeah. And we'll connect you. You can try it out. No commitment. And they're in a mode for the next 2 weeks where I think they're doing some fancy things we like to call the triple threat, where they're going through and hitting all of the weeklies as that they can in three different places to get a bunch of comms to get everybody's gear tuned up and filled in. So even if you don't have all 162 gear or 168 gear yet, you could join up, go with these guys, get your gear up to speed as they're getting theirs up to speed, and then they'll be going into story mode and hard mode, Dread Fortress and Dread Palace before long too. I set up a tiny URL to direct people to the thread that talks about SupSops team. It's tinyurl.com/joinsup, JOINSUP. Take a look or find me on Twitter or wherever else, and I'll get you the information too if you're interested.
And we'll have that in the show notes too on newoverlords.com, right?
That's a good idea. Yes, yes, we will. I will make the show note minion do that. Who is me? Okay, so that leads us to our rotating segment for this week, which is a little tour of some real estate we wanted to show off for our new business in Star Wars, where we're going to be trying to pawn off real estate on people.
Even now, our ships prepare to launch and deliver our devices to other worlds. Dromund Kaas, Nar Shaddaa, and Coruscant.
So, as you can see, the previous owners are already moving out. They have plans to go elsewhere. So we've got this lovely little property to show you. We call it the Dread Fortress. Let's give you a little tour. So yes, we spent time in the Dread Fortress and we cleared it this week, which was fun.
Yes.
So we're going to go through. This won't be a guide on how to do every boss, but we will go through. We're going to talk about each of the bosses, some of the tips and tricks we found, how we got through it. I wouldn't call us yet experts on every possible way to shortcut or min-max these bosses. And this is story mode, but it was pretty fun. So we'll touch on each of them. So the first boss, once you get in and you get past the bridge of lava where the first trash will knock you into the lava, if you don't know what you're, you don't realize that they do that.
Yeah. The first boss is the lava.
Yes. The first boss is the bridge with the lava. Then you get to Nephra. And Nephra on story mode is a cakewalk. It's not very difficult at all. There's only a couple basic mechanics. The tanks need to both tank it at the same time because they share a cleave. The cleave damage gets shared between the tanks if they're both standing in front of it. There's a dot that goes out that, I don't know, that's something healers worry about. I don't even care about that.
It's actually a negative effect. So anybody who has a cleanse can cleanse it, which is good.
Like mercenaries like me, I should be cleansing myself. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, probably. Although in story mode, it does so little damage, you can pretty much ignore it.
Pretty much. And by the way, I do cleanse myself.
Yes, you do. Yeah. I do.
You're right. In story mode, it barely hits you. And then there's the exploding droid ads. They like walk out. They pick somebody to chase down. And as soon as they get to you, then a red circle's on the ground. You walk out of the red circle and nobody has to worry about
them. It's actually a huge red circle. It is so big. It's like a circus, big. And it's hilarious, too, when it lands near the tanks, because they're like, go right, go left, go right, because they have to stay together, right? Sort of like this.
Right.
Three-legged race.
That's a good visual. Maki and Brewdog hopping around. Potato sack race. So yeah, but other than that, tank and spank, shoot the boss. It went down so fast. I was blinking, realizing that was over so quickly. That's an easy one.
And then after that boss, there's actually a puzzle between you and boss number two, which is fairly simple. It's kind of, it's similar to that four-person heroic that's in Section X, where you have to click to open up gates to let people through, and then they have to click from, anyway, so.
Yeah, the Ghostbusters doors in,
exactly.
In Section X.
Although these, they're clicky crystals. So you basically have people on the inside clicking on four crystals to open up gates, and then they let four people out, and then they go down one path towards where the next boss is, and the people on the inside go down another path. You have to make sure there's at least a tank in the group that goes down the inside, because there is a little, not really a mini boss. He's a champ that you have to kill, and it's nice to have a tank for that. We did find out though that you can mess up the system. Like, we had three people clicking on two crystals once, and then we could not get the gates open after that unless all five people clicked the crystals, which seems a little weird. But we just ran out and ran back in, and it reset the crystals, and then we were fine after that.
Yeah, so besides that first four, and this is 8-man. In 16-man, you have to go even a little bit further. But in 8-man, as long as four people click those first four crystals and two people run through the left gate and two people run through the right gate, after that, it's just click all the crystals that you get to and shoot all the things, and then you end up at the boss.
And there's one guy that reflects damage. I never ran into that, but I guess someone did.
Yeah, on our side. I don't know what the deal is. So Bruce said, so he puts a little bubble on himself, and I kept getting reflect, and I have massive damage. So I was hurting myself pretty badly. But Bruce said, Bruce said if you stand inside the bubble, then that's how you damage this guy. I was not getting that. I was still getting reflect. So I don't know if he still reflects and you just need to share the damage between the two of you and get him down, or what, or I missed some mechanic, but it wasn't too bad. We got through it. We got past it every time anyway. It's not that big deal.
So then you do get to the boss. His name is Draxus. And he basically, there's nine waves of adds. And the way I think of it is the adds are the boss. And each wave of adds has a different combination of mobs. What we found is it's pretty important to to DPS the boss when you can, because otherwise you end up with the boss up and the adds up at the same time, and that was hurting us the first time that we tried it. So you got to read the guides, get a good understanding of which mobs have to go down and which mobs you can leave standing so that you can turn and DPS the boss. Once we figured that out for ourselves, then we were able to kill him. Even though he still had the bug where the dots, that one dot is ticking for like twice the amount that it ticks for in hard mode. We even got through it in that case.
Yep. The one that comes off the guardians, the dot that they throw out. We did a good job though. I think the key tip that we ended up getting to that we did wrong when we were trying it last week was, it's better, especially when you need to be like interrupting the corruptors or you have groups on multiple sides, splitting your DPS and having them go off and interrupt different groups of corruptors, or splitting off into two sides and DPSing down seemed to work much better than us all running around, running back and forth, running all over the room, and like taking 5 minutes to run back and forth from side to side, and then, you know, not DPSing that whole time and hitting the enrage timer.
Plus, I think we also, the first few times we tried it, we kind of freaked out about the adds that are casting the force lightning, because they just kind of cast it continually. And just seeing all that lightning, it made us think, oh man, we got to kill those guys. But in reality, you can leave those guys alone and just heal through the force lightning. Other things are more important to kill.
One sort of bug I noticed, what are they called? Not the demolishers, the bulwarks. So there's the dudes that cast the shield over the group, and you have to stand under the shield inside. It's a big shield. You have to stand inside the shield to DPS people under there. You do need to be careful about the terrain inside the shield. If you're down a step or up a step or standing on the weird pattern on the floor that's off a step, you can still be getting absorbs as if you're outside the shield. So even when you're under the shield, make sure that if you're DPS, your shots are not saying absorb over the mob's head. And if they are, shift a little bit to the right or left. Make sure your shots aren't getting absorbed. Otherwise, you're going to be missing DPS.
Hey, that's kind of sucky.
That's a DPS trick. So that leads to boss number three, Grob Thok, or as I like to call him, Mecha Rancor.
Yeah, he's very cool looking.
So yes, he's some sort of cybernetic giant beast who's very cool. And again, in story mode, so the second boss is the hardest, is from what I can tell in this instance on story mode. The third boss is not very hard on story mode again. So there's only three things that happen. There's Ugnuts, as Spunkin calls them. The trio of Ugnuts will come and spawn during the fight like 3 or 4 or 5 times as ads. There's a mining droid who targets someone, and that makes you leave a trail of these little lava pools, and you just got to sort of run and not into the group, and don't drop your lava trail where the group is going to have to run across it. Although I did learn in some of the tips, again, it doesn't matter in story mode because we just AoE'd them down. But if you kite the Ugnuts over the lava pools, they take damage from them.
Oh.
And then the other big thing that Grob Thok does is he pulls up pulls a pipe out of his butt. I don't know where he gets it. Puts his hand behind his back, and he comes out with this giant pipe.
Right. It's really big.
The idea is there's that big magnet that's hovering around above the room. You kite him slightly in front of the magnet, and when he picks up the pipe, then you push him back, or you leave him right in place so that the magnet gets over his head, and then he can't use the pipe to do the smash on the tank. Except if you're in story mode, the smash with the pipe doesn't do very much damage, and it looks hilarious when he's pounding on your tank with the giant pipes.
I think they only had him close enough to the magnet maybe one time, right, to actually avoid the
once or
pipe
twice.
Smash.
I mean, it's really hard on the tanks. They need to get any trouble. Right. The tanks need to get used to positioning, so it's good to practice it, but it is difficult to get that in place.
It seems like he moves pretty slow, so you probably have to aim for a point ahead of the magnet, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. And sort of keep moving him, which is hard to continue to time.
Yeah. And then that sort of brings us to boss number 4, Corruptor Zero, which actually, did we one shot that? Because I remember it was just went by in a moment. There are ads to kill. You know, I'm just watching health bars at that point, so I don't know about the ads. Yeah. Some boss abilities to watch out for, anti-grav in particular. There is a sort of Titan 6 style missile salvo, so you just spread out for that. And then there's a laser attack he does. And we just kind of smashed up against those red walls, and then we were avoiding it. So we didn't have enough trouble with this boss to really have a lot of tips and tricks. We just kind of went in there and moved around and killed him, and seemed to work for us. So when we get to doing it on hard mode, maybe we'll have more to say about him.
Yeah. On story mode, again, that's relatively easy. There's two healer bots that are in the waves of ads that you got to make sure you kill first. Then you kill the two big ones, and then you kill the rest of the bots. Anti-grav, you got to run out of it fast. If somebody gets stuck in it, then maybe the tank needs to pick up the boss, the off tank. If you do get stuck in it, you will be humiliated because you'll float dangling uselessly in the air, which I thought was pretty amusing.
You float in the air and then everyone knows you got stuck in it.
Yes. Other than
I
did the thing with, you know, which is in some of the videos where you sort of stand at one of the corners. The whole room is sort of like a plus sign. And if you stand at one of the corners, when the laser's going horizontally, then you just, you know, you sort of rotate yourself around the corner to the sort of the vertical part of the plus. And then when it switches to the vertical and you go to the horizontal, you just walk back and forth around a corner. I guess in story mode, you can even press yourself up against a wall and you don't get hit by the laser. And you could survive standing directly in the laser from what it sounds like.
I'm guessing
if your health
could,
is
right?
Topped off. And then finally, you get to the last boss, sweet Miss Brontes, or as we call her, Miss Doc Ock. Who
did we call her that?
Brewdog was consistently calling her that, which I like because she's got those
funny
tentacle arms coming out of her back. She's got the whole Doc Ock thing going on. She has tentacles coming up out of the ground that are the hands of Brontes and the fingers of Brontes. And then she's got a bunch of phases. It's not very difficult in story mode. We wiped a couple times because we were getting used to a couple things. You got to DPS the fingers first. I always DPS the middle finger. Then you DPS the hands. In some of the phases, the hands are doing these big AOE AoE stomps, so the tanks have to point them away. In hard mode, the tanks have to worry about swapping the right and left hand because they get a debuff. You don't have to do that in story mode. In another phase, she fires a long lightning beam across the room. She's in the middle of the room, and the lightning beam ticks around the room clockwise like the second hand on a clock. There's a series of droids that are circling the room in an arc. If her beam touches one of the droids, there's a big explosion that does a lot of damage to everybody. So you DPS the droids in order as that beam ticks around the room, and you don't stand in the beam. It reminded me of the C'Thun fight in old school, not old school, but old school WoW, who had a really cool effect that was super hard for 25 people or 40 people or whatever we had going in there.
That was an Encourage 40 man, right? That's pretty old school.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, it reminded me of a fight in Rift, in one of the instances in Rift, where you're on this mountain, snowy mountaintop, and there was a beam that went around. That beam was hard to avoid. This beam is easy to avoid.
Yeah, this one's easy to avoid, and it doesn't have the same mechanics, and everybody can just run around.
Yeah.
But you kill those droids. Mini Kephises come out at some point. You kill those guys. There's two tricky parts with some of the fingers. In an early phase, the fingers, two hands will pop up, and there'll be a lightning beam between them. Everyone needs to keep moving because they spawn where people are. And then there's a lightning beam between them. If you stand in that beam for more than a second, you're dead. So you got to run for that. And then there's a phase at the very end, the second to last phase, the penultimate phase. There's two hands that the tanks need to face away. And there's six fingers and eight man. Everyone needs to face tank their own finger. I love the puns. You just enjoy the double entendres and puns in this one, as
your
you call
face
it.
Is a finger.
So everyone stands next to a finger because the fingers are basically doing little mini rail shots on whoever's closest. And if no one's standing next to it, then they'll be doing their rail shot off to someone else. And if you're getting three or four of these guys rail shotting one player, you're getting spike damage that's hard to control. If everyone's face tanking a finger, then it turns into sort of raid AoE damage, and the healers can deal with it pretty easily. So you get those fingers down, then you do some final stuff to pound on the boss, and that's an instance. And we had a lot of fun with it, and I'd highly recommend it. It's fun and not too difficult on story mode.
Yeah, I recommend it also. And it's actually a really cool looking instance. At the end, we ran into the Dread Palace because you have to go into Dread Palace to complete the quest for Dread Fortress, which is worth doing because the rewards for the quest then are Arcanian relics of any type. You can pick the kind you want. And what else? Something else. I'm assuming comms, but it was like a purple rep token, maybe?
I think so. And then you get the Tauntaun mount, but you can't ride it until you're legendary status.
That's what I could remember.
But
Tauntaun mount.
You get the armored Tauntaun. Yeah. Yep. So get that done, get your rep up, and you'll have the new mount too. All right. This is a little bit longer than our usual show, but there's some really good stuff to talk about. But as it stands right now, our little EPC-8 droid here is filled up and ready to go. Thanks for listening. For comments or questions, we can be found on Twitter at MaxTheGray and at AIEsima. Or drop in on Jedi Covenant and ask us for an invite. We could get you right in. Our character names will be in the show notes if you want to find us. For AIE Guild information, you can visit AIE-guild.org or find us on Facebook or Google Plus now at AIE SWTOR. And we will talk to you soon.
Good night.